This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is our News and Cues show. The news is news, and the cues are questions. We just say cues to save time, because you know how we like to keep our episodes real short. Anyway, lots of fun Star Wars news and great questions from our listeners this week, Ken.
A lot on the way in a very short, Four Center fashion, just like we always love to do here. Before we get to all that, we want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, our 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But before we dive into the news, we're going to catch up with us. That's what we have to do. How you doing, Joseph? Star Wars? Life adventures? Do tell.
I really liked your tone. That's a great, calming interview. That's just like made me want to take a bubble bath. It was great.
Star Wars, NPR, yeah. A bubble bath.
You know, I think, you know, just that idea of like, ooh, take me away from it all in a nice bubble bath. Yes, Calgon. That's the ancient reference that had left my mind. If I thought of Calgon, it was probably like, is that, that's got to be a character from Thrawn, right? Calgon's the just the middle part of the name, the chest name, right?
Oh boy.
I've learned a lot of names this week. Anyway, the spoiler, I'm enjoying Thrawn. We're going to talk about it soon. For myself, for life adventures, obviously there are many, many adventures to be had, and we're all having them. But for myself, the Adult Swim show I work on, weird fantasy comedy, Tig Tone, season 2 is in the middle of airing right now. It's every midnight on Sundays. And the episode I scripted was on this past Sunday as we're recording, Tig Tone and the Murder Mystery at the Death Tournament. And that was really great, really fun to see. It's all sorts of television. It's a really collaborative process. So even though it says written by Joseph Scrimshaw, there are, you know, a ton of people's ideas and hard work going into that. But there's a particular element to it that's a little bit of Tig Tone is definitely inspired by the creators, Andrew Kaler and Benjamin Martian. Both love He-Man, and I love He-Man. Mm. And there's an element to the episode that I scripted that was just like, can we just see Tig Tone fight a bunch of weird Skeletor-like hench people, but even weirder? So that in particular, that element of the episode that I scripted was just really, really fun, fun to see. And I've made a tradition now that I'm going to buy an action figure when something with my name on it comes across the television. And last season for Tig Tone, I bought Commander Pyre from Star Wars Resistance. And this time I went and I just went to Amazon and I put in Obi-Wan Kenobi 3¾-inch action figure. And I found for very inexpensive a Saga Legends hologram Obi-Wan. It's just Obi-Wan, but he's blue and see-through, so he's flying home to me today. So that's both my life adventure and Star Wars adventure.
Love it. Love it. I think well-deserved. Yeah, your name on the screen is something that shouldn't get old because it's hard to have happen a lot. It is. Despite your skills and years of doing this, it should always be like, yes, I need to go get a figure and a whiskey.
Yes.
So well earned.
Thank you. A figure and a whiskey. I reward myself a figure and a whiskey for lots of things, but this in particular was my adventure this week.
That's great. Well earned. And the He-Man thing, He-Man's got a weird place in my heart because I love it so much. I grew up loving it, collecting all the figures. My Merman was used. A friend gave it to me and his ear was ripped. It was like a dog-eared Merman.
That's hilarious.
A lot of good stuff. But I also was kind of contraband. My mom, dad, quite frankly, my whole church, not a big fan of me liking He-Man back in the 80s. So I was a rogue. I was a rebel.
It's so funny because the actual animated series is just so infamous for being incredibly nonviolent of, you know, He-Man just throwing people in the mud, and the action figures come with these like actual like ripped fantasy comic books. But yes, the actual show is so peaceful.
It really is. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The figures, those little mini comics that came with the figures. I mean, yeah. I get it. But it is what it is. Good stuff. You know, I got nothing.
So you had life adventures, right? But they weren't anything of specific. It was just getting through life.
Just getting through life. A busy week, which is always good. I did slow down for a little bit of a fire pit session Thursday night. So I guess that's it. The fire, the healing crackle of a fire pit does work. But, you know, it's just one of those weeks. It is what it is. Some real world stuff and just, vet visits and all these kind of things we're trying to work through. So nothing bad. I did the scroll through the phone. And I know you're like me, Joseph, where you're just like, I have 17,000 pictures of my iPhone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to do some waiting. I was in a car waiting and I was like, I could either go to social media or I could just, you know, let me look at pictures. I got through an entire airplane flight one time, just got lost, deleted a button. Like, why do I have this screenshot? What is this? And I found my Galaxy's Edge pictures, which was only March, but it seems like a lifetime ago. Right? What year was this? And there's my Star Wars in life adventure. Just looking, because I do take the fun little Instagram-worthy kind of photos and me posing, eating the pineapple ice cream in the rain and all the... But I also do the, let me just snap pictures I'll never need again. But the thing is, as you're scrolling through, you're like, oh, there's that corner of Galaxy's Edge. There's this, there's that. Or any purpose? Nope, I just took pictures. I just took pictures. So help me relive the joy of attending Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm in that same place of like, I really need to set aside a week where I delete photos, because there's a lot that like, yeah, I just want one Instagram photo of this pose or this poster. And like, I took 17 shots and I can delete 16 of them. But besides that, it is great how the phones are like little visual diaries, right? And there's sometimes where I'm like, mm-hmm. Did I really do all those things that I remember that week? And oh, I totally forgot about reading that I was reading that Star Wars book during that, yeah. You know, other thing in my life. And it is really fun to just flip through and have like, these were the days of your life last year that you already forgot.
Well, it's like you go home to the folks and you pull down the baby books or the photo books off the shelf back in the day, you know, with the printing the pictures out and whatnot. And sometimes I do miss that I don't have that for myself, right? You know, I don't know. I get it. I like it all, you know, digital, I suppose. But yeah, so it's the same feeling, though. Of just yeah. Like, oh, here's me in 2012. Why did I take this shot in my office? I don't know, but I'm glad I have it now.
Exactly.
So that is that. But I'll tell you what, we're going to have some Star Wars adventures soon. Star Wars Squadrons on the way, and kind of getting excited for that. Even though I know I'm going to be dizzy, perhaps barf, and crash a lot flying inside that cockpit, but I'm excited.
Well, you'll have that bobblehead you can unlock, right? And that will keep you nice and nothing like a bobblehead to make you feel less nauseous, right? We'll see.
Bouncing along. On that note, let's get into the news, because we have some toys coming our way. Speaking of bobbleheads, PulseCon happened, and wow, do we have a lot of toys to go through. This is, of course, Hasbro Pulse, the PulseCon. I'll be honest, I hadn't really heard of it before. I'm sure it existed, and I'm sure we've even talked about it in the news before. But I don't know, just maybe because I'm home, focused a little bit more. PulseCon, okay, here we go. Let's go to PulseCon, everybody. Have you heard of PulseCon, Joseph? Did I just sleep on this and miss it completely, even though we've talked about it?
I think I did know about PulseCon, but it can be so hard to keep track of because Hasbro does a great job of they hold a lot back for PulseCon, but then usually there's some stuff at San Diego, and then there's some stuff at New York Comic Con, and I think D23. So, like, I think I just get focused on when are the toys going to be, and when can I buy them?
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I'm sure you could find Force Center clips of me going in here at PulseCon. I'm totally sure of it. But I was just like, all right, dude, what a year. This has slipped my mind. But let's dive in. Lots to talk about here. I'm just going to kind of run through it here, and we'll stop and talk along the way here. First one, I think the big one is Hasbro HasLab crowdfunded the vintage Razor Crest. This is like they did with Jabba's Sail Barge. Crowdfunded this big giant behemoth of a toy. This one, of course, a little bit smaller than the sale barge, but it is for 3 3/4 scale collectors. Let me check my notes, $349.99. It was a 100% funded, Joseph. You can get this now. It's out there, or will be one day. What do you think about that?
It funded so fast, which is so great. I'm so very tempted. I really like this idea of, yeah, we'll make something crazy if you prove that there is an actual audience for it. You know, I would be very curious to see them do some other stuff like it, even more like this. I know they're been doing a lot of stuff like this, but I love this. And it makes perfect sense that they would go for the Mandalorian. Because that is, you know, the Mandalorian itself is so built on the history of the toys the vintage line is being vintage about. So, man, there's a part of me that is, I'm glad that you have to pay $350 to get the thing. And it comes with the Mando action figure, and it's got a soft cape, and it's unique. Soft goods cape. Great. There's a part of me that's like, can I just pay $50 for just the box? Which I know is not how it works, but I'm partially excited. I would love to have that thing and fly it around and have that unique Mando and, you know, put baby Yoda, put the child in the cockpit. Oh, great stuff. But there's also that part where it's just like, I just like seeing the vintage packaging for new things.
Yes. The vintage. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you said. It is like meeting a friend again for the first time. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. Exactly.
Yeah, that packaging, the old Kenner kind of vintage packaging, it does something. It really kind of connects to something in the inner child in you, and it gets me happy. It's just happy. Would you want, maybe this exists, I should search, probably like on Etsy more than anything. Would you want to hang a series of framed covers of Kenner classic figures and box and toys?
Oh, yes, I absolutely would. My God. Right? Yes, yes.
This came into my mind because I've been doing those brick building sessions on Twitch where I usually, you know, build some Star Wars Lego sets. And I've been, because it's me, not wanting to just throw the boxes away. So I'll cut the front of the boxes out. And some of the Lego sets, they're really, the photography is just really fun and exciting and dynamic. And the toy looks great. And I've thought, do I just hang these up? I just do that. It might be a bit indication of a bigger problem, but yeah, right. Like that Y-wing, a framed Y-wing box cover.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because I mean, we've talked about them a little bit when we've been doing like Star Wars Ranked about figures and things like that. There's the actual nostalgia. There's the aesthetic of the artwork, and then there's just the like, what's going on? You know, when you've got like Lando greeting a snowspeeder or something. Like why? Just because they're just like, yeah. You can make up stories with these kids. So the ones that have got the kind of weird narrative are like, how would that happen? I love those.
I think the classic Kenner Y-wing, I could be mistaken. I could probably just look it up, but I think Akbar was on it.
Oh, yeah. And,
which kind of is almost because I think Raddus is in one of the Y-wing Lego sets. We got a Mon Calamari leader. Put him with a Y-wing.
So get that fish in a ship.
That's not our news story, but Joseph and I just discovered art we want to hang in our houses. Love that there. We'll update you on when you can all spend your allowance money on the vintage Razor Crest. We've got Black Series 6-inch editions, a lot of them. We also got some 3 3/4 on the way here, but let's talk about the Black Series ones here. They got those 50 Lucasfilm limited figures with the different packaging. We have less there. We have Commander Cody, Thrawn, Hoth Han Solo, Hoth Luke Skywalker. Good series there, but Joseph, the main event here. I'll go right to it here. But 6-inch, the classic kind of the new line here, Black Series, with some great new packaging. I love the color, little fonts and everything on a little bit different. We get Incinerator Trooper. Mm. We have Phase 1 Clone Trooper for all you Attack of the Clone fans. We have Return of the Jedi Boba Fett. And then I just think this is a trifecta here. We have Dark Side Vision Rey, the Armorer, and Jar Jar Binks. Wow. My heart be still. I want the Jar Jar. I want the Armorer. And yeah, that Dark Vision Rey looks damn cool. Joseph, what say you? What do you want to hang on your wall?
Oh, these are all great. And I try to keep my collection to the 3 3/4. I do have some Black Series when there's just the character's not available anywhere else or just really want to celebrate something. And damn it, this is breaking me. I need a lot of these for sure. Jar Jar Binks. And you know what? They're really doing a great job, not just on the figures, but the accessories. The accessories have always been a big part of the toy game. And the fact that this Jar Jar Binks is basically not just Jar Jar Binks. This is Jar Jar Binks, you know, parentheses, Bombad General, right? He's he's got all his weaponry. So it's got this vibe of like, and the weaponry is cool designs, right? It looks cool. Yeah. So this is not like Mos Espa Jar Jar, you know, with the tool he drops, you know, when he's working on the pond racer. There's not, you know, a poodoo on his foot, you know. He's got all the cool weapons, and this is a little bit of a justice for Jar Jar kind of figure, right? They're like, look, he's cool. He's got all these weapons. So that I love. And the Dark Side Vision Ray absolutely going to buy that because I just really, really want more from Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, I know that's been part of the discussion I've been seeing in, especially even in our Discord on Force Center. Yeah, a lot of people want more Rise of Skywalker stuff. A lot of that has to do with the, you know, it's easy to repaint some armored figures, all that kind of stuff. So we get it. We get the business of the action figures, but on a base level, just more from Rise of Skywalker. Definitely. And the Darkseid Ray, that's going to be a big seller. I think people are excited about that one. It looks good. Yeah, that Jar Jar one, it's just the packaging. And a lot of these, some of these were supposed to be like convention exclusives. In fact, the other one, the Armorer, the packaging, it's different than the classic, the normal, peg hanging Black Series boxes and packages. I mean, this one, it's ready for display, and she's, working on a hat or working on a Mandalorian helmet. Mid armor. So this one too, I love the character. I've been watching Mandalorian again this week, and just her ass kicking scene. She's got some great philosophy, some great insights, some great stuff. When she just starts whacking stormtroopers in the face with a hammer, I'm like, this is good stuff. I haven't been collecting as much lately, Joseph. I think I have to get these three figures.
Yeah. I know the armor is an exclusive, so she might take a little bit more work. But yeah, one of my favorite characters from The Mandalorian. And again, killing it with that accessory game. I love that she comes with helmet whacking tools and a helmet to whack.
Yeah. We all need a helmet to whack.
I have so many Boba Fetts. And honestly, I think just about every Boba Fett ever made is pretty good, because Boba Fett just looks cool. Even their original, Kenner, looks cool. I love that this one comes with a severed blaster, and there's a part of me that wants to buy him just to put him out with this severed blaster.
I mean, this is how they get you. You'll pay upwards of maybe $30 if you want to track this down someplace to get that severed blaster.
Yep. They got me.
I don't encourage it. If you all could steal the severed blaster and sell them on eBay, I mean, you'd make a killing. I don't condone that. Do not do that. And you talked offline, Joseph. I want to make sure you bring this up here, because I have stopped collecting out of just room, allowance money issues. It's just time for me to put them aside and maybe even get rid of some of mine. I'm kind of in that weird phase. I got to support Jar Jar, man. I've got to support dollar votes.
Yeah, I think that is a big part of this. And there was such a positive reaction on social media to Jar Jar, as well as to, like, you know, I think in general, the Black Series and I think really all the figures that are coming out right now tend toward the cool and the badass and the fighter. And so that they've positioned Jar Jar that way is cool. But it is also just like you were just saying, it's a vote for, we want to see more characters like this, you know, and there's a lot of prequel love going on in this wave of releases. So it's just good to vote for what you want to see more of. And I would like to see more of the weirdos and the characters that we need to re-examine, like Jar Jar.
Absolutely. Give me a 6-inch Boss Nass or a Handmaiden set, all those kind of things. Let's celebrate Phantom Menace. So good stuff there. We'll update you on if we're able to track some of these down. We also got the holiday figure line. I don't want these at all, except for I might have to get them. Here's why. We got Clone Trooper, Range Trooper, Sith Trooper, Storm Trooper, Snow Trooper, all repainted in beautiful festive holiday colors. But here's the thing. They all come. You talk about accessory game strong, Joseph. Most of these come with a little holiday scarf wear and porg. And one, I think it's the Range Trooper or Sith Trooper, comes with Dio, holiday Dio. I might need this.
Yeah, one comes with holiday deal with red nose, like Rudolph, and another comes with little holiday Babu Frick. And this one, they know what they're doing. They know, like, yeah, we did it again. We repainted troops again. But you're going to buy them because there's cute holiday, festive, wintertime porgs, Babu and Dio. And like, you monsters.
What I love in my weird headcanon, especially with the Range Troopers over there on Vandor, snowy planet, I can imagine one kind of annoying Imperial being like, we should encourage some festive spirit for the holidays, for Life Day. The troopers shall wear these festive colored armor stuff. I've dealt with this kind of thing before in my other line of work, where it's like, can we put elf ears on the officers? No. So I can get behind buying these figures and just have them as seasonal deployed stormtroopers. The porgs with the scarf. Come on. What are you doing?
Yeah, that's the one that breaks me. I like the humor of it. I like the let's have fun. I particularly like the troopers that look like their armor has been printed with a Star Wars holiday sweater artwork. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. If I was going to get one, which I'm on the fence, I think it would be the Snowtrooper, because that little porg looks the most honest to being cold. Like, it's got the little scarf and it's looking up at the Snowtrooper like, what are you doing to me? Why are we out here?
Oh, the weather outside is weather. Get the holiday figures. But yeah, you know, it's a holiday related things, memorabilia in Star Wars kind of go hand in hand. A little bit of a tradition there. We talked about the McQuarrie, Yoda, and all that kind of stuff. So it tracks. It works for me. I don't think I'll get any of these at the end, of course, but I can get behind it. I can get behind
yeah,
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But here's this is you. This is your wheelhouse here, Joseph. The 3¾ vintage line. We get some new ones coming in, and I like what I see here. Incinerator Troop. They're really like the Incinerator Trooper here. TIE Fighter Pilot. Helmet comes off. B1 Battle Droid. Captain Rex, which looks sharp, but I think the two best here. We got Queen Amidala and Anakin Skywalker Peasant Disguise. I want these two figures. Absolutely going to try to add them to my collection.
Yeah, the Queen Amidala, I think, is the one that I am most excited about. I like that outfit. I get the Incinerator Trooper that, you know, it is from Mandalorian. I'm glad to see any figures from Mandalorian. I like Captain Rex with that Clone Wars logo on there. That's all great. I'm excited for all these. I'm excited for the prequel love that is represented. The 3¾ vintage, that's the place that I really want to see. Some more from Rise of Skywalker. So I don't think they'd do that, but my fantasy is that there would be a crowdfunding thing. If they're concerned that, hey, we're concerned that you're not going to buy a vintage Kylo with cracked helmet that comes with Claude in a fantasy fight, you know, or anything like that. Or if it was, here's the Agent Kloss base with, you know, Claude and, you know, a couple of, you know, awesome main character hero types. That would be great if they sometime did a HasLab, you know, and saw if there was enough demand for it.
Yeah, I'd like Lando's little tread vehicle there. Give me that.
Oh,
give me that one.
Yeah, with Clone, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'd say that all day. I wouldn't stop saying it. Chase my dogs around going, okay. Good. Now, talking about casting the dollar vote here, this Amidala, really like it. Different kind of, you know, I think a lot of people expect, oh, you're going to make a 3¾ Amidala. She'd be in kind of the classic, you know, all of her robes and everything from Phantom Menace, I think, are great, all of her outfits. But this is the kind of the royal look here versus like the classic kind of red dress with the lights on the bottom. The names of these outfits are escaping me right now. I apologize. But I really like this choice. I really like this choice, and definitely want to put some votes behind that one too.
Yeah, absolutely. Ooh, you know what? You know what? I'm going to change my idea for Rise of Skywalker. If they did the, you know, Exegol confrontation set, right? And you could have Emperor hanging from the claw machine arm, and you could have Emperor with a new dyad made clothing.
Yes.
And you could have Ben Solo with a hole in sweater. And, you know, anyway, I'll stop now. And of course, Ray. Anyway, I'm going to stop myself, Ken. I can do it.
You can do it. I know. Yeah. But the thing is, too, like the 3¾, if you're like me and you're a little short on space right now for display, I mean, they're just tinier. They're just tinier versus a 6-inch, which I've always loved. I love the display. I in my old apartment, I had them all hanging on a wall like I was 14 again, just thumbtacks in the wall, just all hanging. I can't do that anymore. Just the realities of it. But those 3¾ packages, they can fit in places a lot easier there. Final big thing from this release here is the Ahsoka Tano lightsaber. I don't collect these, but these always look good. You know, good for display. This is, it's good. Again, Ahsoka getting some attention is always a good thing, I think. And this lightsaber looks sharp. Have you ever been tempted by these lightsabers, Joseph?
No, this is definitely a space and time and money that I got to stop myself. I got my lightsaber from Galaxy's Edge, and I'm gonna keep it there for now. But really very happy for Ahsoka, you know, because I think there is such great love for the character as there should be. And I think that's one of those, hey, please make this and we will buy it. So I'm glad to see it out there.
Yeah, and then just as we went to record today, they released Funko's release in Ahsoka and Darth Maul figures. So there you go. Funko Pops. It's an entire different conversation with me right now there. Anyone want some? Might be giving them away here. All right, so that's our look at PulseCon and the big releases there. Always fun to see the new Star Wars toys. Even if you're like me, your collecting days might be waning or maybe on pause. You see some of these and you're like right back where you started. Ready to add them. This is kind of, I love these little stories. These are ones I don't think we super discuss all the time here. It's from People magazine. Giancarlo Esposito was speaking with People prior to the 72nd annual Primetime Emmy Awards last week. And the Moff Gideon actor said, this is the quote that went around the world, "We're living in a universe that is huge and there's so much to explore. So I think this show," he's talking about The Mandalorian, of course, "is going to lay the groundwork for the depth and breadth that's going to come in season 3 and season 4, where you're really going to start to get answers." So this made a bunch of headlines over the last week. Joseph, as Mandalorian planned for 4 seasons, confirmed, all those kind of things. But hey, you know what? Hell, let's dive in, because I had fun with this. I maybe it's because I'm a little knee deep in Mando right now. I there's something about this. I also like that Giancarlo Esposito seems to be, he's kind of the Mads Mikkelsen of this Mandalorian when he was in Rogue One, just going, "Hey, I play like Jin's father or something." Like, what? Giancarlo Esposito has been saying a lot of like, "Oh yeah, I fight the Mando." So, you know, who knows what he's saying and who knows what's real, but I just kind of like that too. So let's dive in, Joseph. Other than explaining, this is how a TV show works over the course of many seasons, it's going to get deeper and bigger and more characters, and you'll get answers. That's literally how a TV show works. I want to break this up into two parts here. What do you think this tells us about season 2? No specifics, just looking into it, looking at season 2. What do you think this tells you about it?
Yeah. I just wanted to comment briefly on how much Giancarlo Esposito cannot be contained. I'm so fascinated with what's going on with that, because I have learned more from random quotes from Giancarlo Esposito that just flow through my Twitter timeline than I did for the actual trailer of The Mandalorian. I know more plot points just from Giancarlo Esposito, which it's kind of fun and fascinating and amusing that he cannot be contained. Yeah, I just don't know why. But to your point, I think that this is a real good expectation setter. Who knows? Giancarlo Esposito, obviously phenomenal actor, but sometimes actors aren't entirely in the know. Season 3 and 4 might be a confirmation of 4. Yeah, you certainly know a season 3 is going to come. I'm sure Disney Plus is like, hey, John, how many of these do you want to give us? That'd be great, you know? But who knows on that? What I think is interesting is we're going to get more answers. Because I think that gives me the expectation that season 2 of Mandalorian is going to be a lot like season 1 in terms of plot, in information about big picture stuff. It's probably going to be kind of slow burn, and season 2, just like season 1, is probably going to be more about character growth and how characters change as they go through these individual adventures that are complete little adventures each episode, but really slowly dole out the big plot. Like, if you look at just the big picture plot of The Mandalorian and say, the Mando is sent after an asset, but realizes it's a child that he bonds with, and he doesn't feel like he is that he can actually give this child up for bounty. So he protects it. But then the person who paid for that bounty comes looking for it. That's basically the plot. And that's an hour of television in one kind of storytelling. But that's not the kind of storytelling that The Mandalorian has been doing. It's slow burn, where there are interesting events, there's fun action, but in terms of really moving the big plot forward, it doesn't move the big plot forward super fast. It takes time with the characters. And to me, that's what I got out of this, is like, oh, it's not going to have its foot on the gas in terms of big picture plot. It's going to be individual adventures where we learn a lot about the characters.
Yeah, it was nice. That's why I kind of want to dive into it a little bit. It was nice for me to hear and to take from this, because I can already see myself. This is looking in the mirror, 100% in the mirror, going, Oh yeah, who is that character? Does that one character show up? Oh my gosh, that could mean. I still think at the end of the day, this is going to be similar to season one, and maybe not all just the side quest stuff. You know, episodes 4, 5, and 6 are real side questy too as well. I mean, that's actually a real big side quest with the mini boss there. It's a reminder to just not get caught up on what we're going to see in terms of characters and big revelations, but just concentrate on the Mando moving forward. And the Mando, having his mission overall this season, get the baby back to the other mystic wizards. And what is he going to learn on that journey? What are we going to learn about the galaxy as a whole? If that makes any sense, it's for a good thing for me. And this would happen with Game of Thrones, even though, I was a book reader, and actually that made it worse, where I'd see a trailer for the next season of Game of Thrones, and then I'd get super, super, super excited. Because did you see that sigil? Oh, God, that means so-and-so's here. And that must mean this. And that must mean this. It ties into the speculate responsibly theme here on Force Center. But even beyond that, I can just spin out. And I'm already excited about potential rumored characters that I honestly haven't dug in anymore. But I just want to, it's good to remind myself to go, the bigger answers will come later.
Yeah. Yeah. It just feels like it's not going to be like, okay, episode one, we get resettled into the Mandalorian. Episode two, he finds Ahsoka. She tells him where to go, but then we run into Moff Gideon and he tells us our whole plan. Like, could be, but I'm not expecting that.
Yeah. Yeah. Bo-Katan shows up and says, that's my darksaber. And then they fight. I have all those speculations too, but this is. And we can start looking ahead to seasons 3 and 4 here, Joseph. I really just trust what they will do with it getting bigger and how it will just, I think it will slowly get bigger to where I can foresee in season 2, we might have some like, what is this filler? Not necessarily from these airwaves or other podcasts we know, but just the general conversation. I bet we're going to have those conversations, and then slowly but surely, because we're watching episode 7 of season 1, where it's like, oh, that's right. He does go back and pick up the super team of super friends that he met along the way. Yep, yeah, you're right. And I remember being kind of, what's episode 4? Why is it? So again, reminders for me, and that's what I'm looking forward to, some of the stuff coming our way.
Yeah, yeah. And him finally taking the helmet off with IG-11 would not have any of the weight without that whole episode of almost taking his helmet off in the village, you know?
Yeah. So looking ahead, 3 and 4, we don't know much. And we're not lying, Joseph. I don't have a secret cheat sheet of scoops. I'm not hiding. In fact, I was in the living room the other day. Mandalorian was on, and Grace, my girlfriend, asked. She goes, "Hey, who's what's?" And she asked me. I even forget what it was. She goes, "And something about season 2." And I said, "I don't know. I really don't know." And it's exciting to be in that spot because I kind of, a lot of us kind of knew some stuff coming into some of this. So we don't know much. Where do you envision the themes of the show leading us, Joseph, in season 3, maybe 4?
I think this is partially because of stuff that Giancarlo Esposito has said before, but combining that with even more stuff he said about we'll get bigger answers later, I feel like this is really going to be about the philosophical perspective of Moff Gideon. I feel like that's what we're going to learn. He said some stuff about, he's really going to attack Mandalorian psychologically, as well. So that makes me think we're going to really learn about what is his perspective and what in that is a temptation to the Mandalorian, or what in that causes doubt for Mandalorian. And I think we might get to some good, solid, really traditional Star Wars themes, but from this different perspective, this different pacing and style of storytelling. But I can really see Moff Gideon attacking Mandalorian with playing to Mando's doubt, Mando's nihilism, Mando's fear. Mando is a character who started on the path that we know because his parents were brutally murdered in conflict. And then to just get by, his life has been full of conflict. And now he has this possibility of family, this possibility of a new way of looking at the galaxy. But he's got to be that kind of realist who's dances on the edge of realism is pessimism of like, come on, the truth is everybody sucks and you got to shoot your way through life. That's, he's trying to let himself see something else, But I think it leaves him open to sort of that sort of philosophical attack from somebody like Moff Gideon of like, look, the world is horrible. And the galaxy is horrible. The New Republic are a bunch of hypocrites. And the only point in the galaxy is everybody's grabbing for power. So we might as well be the one. Somebody's going to have a boot on somebody's neck. So we might as well be the one with the boot on the neck, and seeing if that is kind of a pressure on Mandalorian, contrasted with, you know, there's been so much talk about, myself included, of like, ooh, if he's looking for answers to the Jedi and the Force and the child species, who could he bump into? Ahsoka, you know, all these clickbaits of, is Luke Skywalker going to show up? All that. That's all interesting and juicy to see, like, which Force people is he going to talk to or find? But I think this show is probably going to be more about how does encountering the philosophy of the Jedi in the light side of the Force challenge him? You know, the light side of the Force and the Jedi at their best preach hope in the face of darkness. They preach that, yes, the path of light is complex and you're going to fail, but you got to go toward the light because it's the light. So it's interesting to me to think maybe Mando's journey is going to take him to a place of kind of choosing between the light and the dark in a really classic Star Wars way.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know it's almost like it is a repeatable thing. Han Solo and Finn and all variations of that. But I still think that's always kind of Star Wars at the core. And we always talk about if you veer too far from that, yeah, you know, I don't know if it's as powerful. It can be as entertaining, but I don't know if it's as powerful. And I think we already see that in season one, right? The identity, trauma, dealing with all those things and where it takes you on you know, in surprising places. The child existing in his life is works for me too on the parent level, the found family level. But you kind of touched upon it, is if he does discover some of these people with these skills, these philosophies, in the face of what he's being presented by Moff Gideon, what he's being presented by the galaxy, the realistic state of the galaxy stuff. And New Republic, yeah. What does that do to him? Does it push him farther into joining a cause, being part of creating his own cause?
You know, maybe
he is the cause, or maybe Yoda, the child, becomes the cause more than just uncovering the use. I mean, I want to know what Moff Gideon, you know, wants to use the child for, and Dr. Pershing, all that kind of stuff. I want those answers, but the theme behind it, yeah, it's interesting. The existence or potential existence of more Force-tuned, sensitive folks with deep-seated philosophies related to that, what that will do to him in the face of the galaxy as it is right now. That's interesting stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I'm really interested in not only like, oh, he, you know, discovers these Jedi that we didn't know were alive. That's all exciting, and that's great, and I think that's a possibility. But that's why I'm really interested in even the idea of Mando and the child ending up in a temple, and they're, you know, really confronted by the philosophical ideas, not just the real straightforward here's a list of Jedi who could possibly train the child. Like, that's great and interesting, but I think that more philosophical of, can the Mando embrace any of the ideas of the light side of the Force in his journey is really interesting to me.
Yeah, because he did a lot of breaking from the past, and now what? You know, where do you go? Where do you join, or if you join at all? And you know, that's going to be, and I'm looking for a lot of, you know, each episode having the theme around that, these nice, beautiful little tone poems and cool Star Wars reveals. We're going to enjoy all of it.
Exactly. Lots of punching and shooting and jetpacking, too.
Exactly. We need jetpacking. Speaking of jetpacking, that's not a transition at all. We've got a director change for Cassian Andor. But, hey, you know, you got to read into a little bit here. It's not as dramatic as maybe you would want to make it. Tony Gilroy is out as a director due to COVID-19 related travel issues and concerns. He lives in New York. Getting to UK for the shoot would be a problem. So he will remain on board as executive producer and showrunner. We know the show's gone through some changes already. It's not ideal, but in the state of the world, the very real world, it makes some sense. And Toby Haynes will take over for the first three episodes. Important to note. We don't know any other directors, and maybe Gilroy could come back for some as they shoot later. Production is supposed to start relatively soon. Productions are starting to get back to not normal, but get back and starting to exist again. So figuring it out. So the thing about Haynes, most known, I think, for the USS Callister episode of Black Mirror and the HBO movie Brexit. I think he's part of what, Utopia, coming out soon, too. So simple enough, Joseph, what do you think about this change, this needed change based on circumstance? And we can talk also about directors to come.
Yeah, I think this is just what a breath of fresh air, no matter what you might think of any of the various director coming and going controversies that have been going on in Star Wars over the last few years. What a breath of fresh air that this is just, hey, it would be dangerous for me to fly away from my family. I'm still very much involved, but you know what? Hey, buddy, you go ahead and direct those. It's just so nice. That's like one of my main reactions when I saw this, like, oh boy, here we go. Is there like, oh my God, there's no problem. There's no problem. It's just a safety thing. And Tony Gilroy, you got to remember, Tony Gilroy started his career as a writer and he entered into directing, but like, there's no like, oh, Tony Gilroy isn't in control anymore. Like he wrote all the Bourne movies and every film he's directed, I believe he has written. So it's, he is somebody who is still has the reins as a writer and as a showrunner. So there's no like, oh, they shifted the concept or, you know, Tony Gilroy wasn't working out. So now he's being kind of put on the back bench. It's great that it's still the same creative direction, just a different director.
Yeah. And I had the same reaction. I think a lot of people listening probably had the same reaction. You see the headlines. And you think, here we go. Oh boy, we're going to have to hear about this. No, yeah, it's some reality stuff. Haynes is based in the UK, makes some sense. I'm not super familiar with Black Mirror. I'm very aware of the show. I just never have watched it. Usually I'm playing video games. I apologize. Do you have experience with this show, Joseph?
No, well, you know what? I watched the first episode of Black Mirror and I was like, this is good. I don't need this right now. I find the technology in the real world pretty creepy all by itself. But that's totally just a taste thing. I know Black Mirror is great, and I'm going to watch some of the suggested episodes, including this one, which I've heard great things about. I have not personally seen any of Toby Haynes' work, but just from knowing what he worked on, Brexit is obviously a political thing. I think Utopia has some elements of horror and sci-fi from the little bit that I've heard. Obviously, his Black Mirror episode, which is a spin on Star Trek, it has got some the meeting place between horror and sci-fi. So political, science fiction, and horrific in a show that's about Cassian Andor having to do horrific things in the name of the rebellion. Sounds like a good choice to me.
Yeah. One of those things. Same. Not super familiar with the work. Other than, you know, you would hear about this episode of Black Mirror. It's one of those episodes. Not unlike, say, the Fly episode from Breaking Bad, directed by Rian Johnson. So, hey, you know, TV episodes that break out into the pop culture zeitgeist, take those people, move them into Star Wars. I'm okay with this. Looking forward to this. You know, this question of what other directors would you like to have in the series? There's a lot of answers. I don't know the names. You know, it's like I trust them to put the right people in place. But what I'll say is I love, maybe it's because I just stumbled. The Disney Gallery director episode just popped up and auto started. And I just watched it while I had a sandwich the other day. Just seeing what Favreau put together, this Dirty Dozen kind of directing vibe, direct Star Wars camp, all that kind of stuff, all those things we heard those directors describe their experience there. That's all I want from the series. Give me the great names. I'd love some of the people we're already familiar with getting shots in other Star Wars stories like Deborah Chow with Kenobi, et cetera, et cetera. But that's all I'm looking for in the episodes that need directors or directors haven't been revealed.
Yeah, me too. I don't have a laundry list of picks other than, you know, hey, anybody who's directed an episode of The Americans, it's a great pick for Cassian Andor as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so we'll look for that when rumors start to emerge. I'm just excited, too, that this is still, number one, the show's still happening, but two, with everything going on, they can start getting some stuff down. Great cast, excited. This is one of the time periods I love. So without a doubt, I'm looking forward to this one a lot. And I'm sure you are as well, Joseph.
Yeah, absolutely thrilled. I think it's going to, as we've talked about a lot, I think it's going to be some really great hardcore emotional espionage. I think if you like the scene where Cassian Andor had to shoot Tivik at the beginning of Rogue One, you're going to enjoy this. This is going to be a whole season of wrestling with killing Tivik. And I'm looking forward to that in a dark way.
I think that should Cassian Andor wrestling with murder. There you go. Final news story of the day. We've got High Republic lightsaber revealed. All right. So I clicked on it. I was like, okay, go. Yeah. Let me look at the lightsaber from a novel. You know, I'll probably have to envision this in my mind. And I got to tell you, this is a sneak peek from the forthcoming book, The Lightsaber Collection, with this great coffee table book coming out. And this is the lightsaber of High Republic era Jedi Master Stellan Geos. And it is an elegant weapon. And I was like, I want to discuss this with Joseph. Do you like the design? Favorite elements? Dive into this saber, Joseph. I think it is really great.
Yeah, I really like it because I think it looks great for all the High Republic stuff, that it looks like lightsabers of the past, but in this more elegant, literally gilded age with all of the gold and being a lot more ornate. So it looks like it really does. The basic lightsaber just kind of looks like Qui-Gon's lightsaber, but fancy. It's got, you know, the black with the large red button, so you don't miss the activation button that Qui-Gon for some reason has. They're really like, press the red button. So I like that all by itself, and it matches all the High Republic stuff, which we can talk about. But then I think it manages to do exactly what modern lightsaber design, I think, needs to, of how can it be different in a cool way that makes visual sense and isn't sort of trying too hard, right? We've got a million GIFs now. Every new lightsaber, there's the GIF of it's a lightsaber, but it's a pocket knife. And oh, here comes the energy corkscrew, you know? Yes. And that is always the danger of designing new lightsabers. And I think this one is just a shockingly elegant, cool idea that, yeah, there'd be other cross sabers, but this one has the little physical parts of the hilt that fold out when the lightsaber is activated and the energy comes across them. So it's got this really strong flying buttress. If you know that architectural term, you know, right? That it's got that, it gives it that sense of like support and strength of, we are the Knights of the Round Table. And I know that's what they're going for, but just visually it really works because it looks so solid and supported, you know? And so it achieved that goal of, it's different in a lightsaber, but not so just bizarre to be different for different sake.
Yeah. No, I can see the practical reasons for it, especially if the technology it's 200 years prior. It's not as developed. You need to, let some of the energy out, but what do we do with that? Obviously makes you think of Kylo, and just like Kylo was like, I don't care. My blade energy just shoots out. And I know Ezra had picked up a similar lightsaber as well in Rebels. I just love it. I love the little buttresses that come down. It looks different, but for the vibe, for the era they're going for, again, I clicked on this kind of like, okay, let me look at lightsaber. And I paused and was like, this, okay, I'm really on board for this. And I find myself more excited for some of the little details of the High Republic than I was at the beginning of the announcement. So that's a little, just a little cool thing for me to realize when I look at it there. And look, we're still a few months away from these stories. We don't know a lot. We're getting little sneak peeks here and there. I know you and I have touched upon this before with the outfits. We've seen the Jedi have a little bit more bedazzled on their outfits there. What do we, now that we've seen the blade, and the blade, again, I can understand if the technology isn't as sleek yet, it's still good tech, but it's not fully formed, right? It's iPhone 3 versus iPhone 10. I get it. But what do you think about this in terms of the Jedi being a little, so we should say, more fashionable than we first met them in the original trilogy, and then definitely in the prequel trilogy?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where they're going to go with the storytelling. They've said that, that is a part of the storytelling that, yeah, obviously just aesthetically it looks like, well, this is a heightened age where things are going well, and so the Jedi look regal and ornate. That all makes sense, but then they've also really hinted, and I think just directly said, like, but we're going to handle the storytelling of why, because we kind of know Jedi is like, we don't need belongings, we don't need fancy things, we will wear the plain robes of farmers, my headcanon and Matt Martin's, and I think many other people at this point. I think eventually it'll get solidified a little bit. What the headcanon that I have right now, and I'm fascinated to see what they'll do, is they're just expanding in the outer rim. So they're used to the core worlds in the inner rim. And if it's a time where everything's working well with Republic, maybe everybody kind of has nicer things. So this is a reflection of, we are the noble Jedi Knights. We help hold this all together. It's for the most part going well for everyone. And we can all express ourselves and our high intentions through lovely garments. And then as they get into, you know, the Outer Rim and, you know, more problems and more poverty, maybe that will be a part of the switch to, oh, we can no longer look ostentatious.
Yeah, no, I think I'm excited about that possibility. Again, we're in wild predictions headcanon territory of, yeah, you get off your Star Cruiser and it's a Jedi and a Padawan looking like they've just stepped out of a, you know, Paris runway fashion show, fashion week. and you got not necessarily less developed worlds, but just some other worlds who are kind of like, yeah, what? We're busy working hard. What are you doing? You want us to join the Republic? Now you fop dandy. No, I'm not joining. I could see that popping up, and I want to see the one Jedi who's like sweatpants Jedi. He's like, nah, you know, guys, what if we just did this? Much more comfortable.
Yeah. And it does look like there's also like, there's the all their clothes are nicer, but there's also like kind of, hey, we are going to official presentations. There's almost like a Star Trek when they have the dress uniform, right?
Yes.
Element to it as well, that they're just such a great integrated part of this society, this galactic society that's overall doing pretty well, that makes it really interesting.
I like that. I don't want to lock myself into the this is the answer. I want to see Yoda at the end of all this High Republic series. That's the last chapter. I want Yoda going, taking off kind of his fancier robes and going, you know, plain I shall wear going forward. Why I'm not writing a Star Wars story. Bonus story. The John Powell did put on Instagram a deluxe edition of the Solo, a Star Wars Story soundtrack coming out, like 2 hours of kind of the actual score, the actual music for the movie. You know, you get kind of the soundtracky score version released at first, and then this is like the actual movie music and big deluxe edition. That's I think the Solo score is underrated. And I'm excited about that too. And what do you feel, Joseph, about just hearing flying over and over?
Oh, I love the Solo soundtrack, and I am definitely, I listen to the soundtrack fairly often, so I'm definitely going to get this new one. And I just really hope that Lulilo Primock has his correct lower register voice. That's the only disappointment for the existing Solo soundtrack, that he's got the high-pitched voice.
You're right. We need that. Hashtag that weirdo's real voice. All right, that's a look at Star Wars news. Before we get out of here, take a quick break and come back with your questions. We're going to give you our audiobook recommendation. Force Center recommends this book, Joseph.
We are recommending, and we have been recommending, Thrawn Ascendancy, Chaos Rising by Timothy Zahn. Please enjoy us recommending it, because this Thursday we'll be doing our review, and then we'll be back to recommending some other Star Wars books as well.
Absolutely. Catch up with Thrawn. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. Get an audiobook on us and support the show in the process. All right. We are going to take a quick break, reset. On the other side, it's your questions here on ForceCenter.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Welcome back to Four Center. Justice Grimshaw is here, and we have got all of your questions. Every week, we take some questions from the far reaches of the galaxy and our supporters on Patreon. And, well, as always, we have some good ones, but some ones that challenge what I know, think, and feel, and want in Star Wars, Joseph.
Oh, I can't wait to see what has challenged you, what has shaken you to the very core of your Star Wars fandom. Let's find out. First, we go to Twitter, and we've got a question from Aaron Motes. Aaron says, sporting events in canon are almost exclusively racing or gambling. If you could design a sport in the Star Wars universe, what would it look like? This is a great question. We've talked sports before, but not in a very long time, a long, long time ago. It looks like we're going to get some more sports in Mandalorian with a little bit of a Gamorrean fighting ring there. There's been things like grav ball mentioned in different canon books, all kinds of stuff. But yeah, for on screen, there's a lot of racing and gambling. So what, you're a sports fan. What do you want for sports in Star Wars?
I would want some sort of team sport, if grav ball is it or something like that. And we see in the Outlander Club, we see what looks like, I think, some droid football. I don't know. There's something going on that's kind of similar. So you give me something like that. The reason being, it would create in the galaxy, it would create, again, teams, planets, areas you're rooting for. Like, I have a t-shirt that's the Hoth City Wampas. Like, all right, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be that. But it would also create stars, characters, sports stars, which could also mean, could tie into underworld betting, gambling, any kind of thing like that. Like, you could do a smaller scale. I'm not saying like TV show or movie, but like, I don't know, a book or a comic or something where you really could play with that, the criminal underworld and a team sport. I'm thinking of like the 1919 Black Sox scandal in baseball, or just how gambling had just totally had a grip over baseball in the early 1900s. That could be interesting to me in the galaxy, tying things. And Aaron's just kind of like, hey, give me a sport. No illicit gambling, but I think you can put it together, or just create some kind of hero and a sports star. You know, sports stars do have great influence, whether they want it or not. But how does a sports star in the galaxy work alongside a Jedi hero? You know, like not saying they're teaming up on a mission, but just like, you're rooting for me. This guy's got four wizard powers. Like, I don't know. Just I could see that. So, but I think that would come out of a team sport where you could have superstars on those teams.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like how they kind of dance close to that. Some of these ideas in Resistance with racers, right? And they even have like kind of the logos, and they've got ego tied up in their identity as racers, but then they can pivot so quickly to also being combat, right? And it would be really interesting to see people who are like, you are an, you know, absolute star at this very specific sport that's very hard to do, but it does not immediately have combat application.
Yeah, and I've always said, you know, fascinated by the pod races, and I know Aaron's mentioning, hey, we got, you know, racing, but like I still say I want a story on, you know, the pod racing circuit and what it could be. I'm fascinated by that. Again, I do like sports. That would make some sense, but that I'm a baseball guy. So what's the, is grab ball, and maybe it's been described somewhere and I just not remembering right now. And I don't want to, you know, say, give me a Quidditch in Star Wars, but yeah, something like that where you could actually spend some time how the game actually works. It'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are bits and pieces all over canon and legends kind of mentioning the side things. But to me, the spirit of Aaron's question is like something as big as pod racing that like, yep, no, we all know that it's been on screen. It's a thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm really intrigued by the kind of sport in different eras that could bring the galaxy together, that there could be, you know, some galaxy cup of some, you know, sport that lots of people like, or maybe it's really popular in the core worlds or the inner rim. So that would be cool. But I'm also really interested in sports that show like a unique culture. Like What jumped to my mind is aliens playing, riding some kind of exotic beast of burden, you know, like a Ronto or a, you know, Yopi or anything like that, Itobi. And then they're basically playing something that kind of looks like British cricket. We're like, ooh, this looks exciting. There. Somebody's throwing something and somebody's swinging something, but I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Ronto ball.
Ronto ball.
I'm all for this. Like a kind of polo, but a less higher class, crusty version of polo, like Ronto ball. Give me that. I'm on board. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, my wife and I were watching a documentary series, with this, woman visiting, different castles in the UK that are still like very traditional. And she went to a Scottish castle, and then there was also a traditional Highland Games, and she was trying to do the caber toss, basically, you know, just throwing the log. Yeah. And I would love to see things like that of like, what is, you know, traditional sports on Utapau that have grown out of living in a sinkhole, right?
That's great. I'll tell you what, because number one, you reminded me of World Games on Epix, from Epix on my Commodore 64, which had caber toss in there as well. Barrel rolling, cliff jumping, bull riding, all those kind of things. Not necessarily the team sport I'm talking about, but you're right. You could go through, and that's something that George would probably be interested in as well. We always know that's what he loves, kind of diving into these cultures and these worlds. And again, I know along the way you could probably point to some stuff in Legends and canon. I totally get it. But just making, you know, for the sake of the question, but just highlighting it. Yeah, you would find that. I think you go to 10 planets and find 10 very specific caber toss-like games. And it doesn't all have to be tossing things. yeah, I think you could be. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah. My final one is I would love some sort of space golf, like maybe it happens in the air, and it's something that fills that very specific. It is a sport. It takes skill. It does take a specific kind of athleticism, but it is also something that is a place where deals are made, or a place where, you know, people with a little bit more money get away from the everyday people, you know? And I can see like Sheev being flown around, you know, in the air above Coruscant for some sort of like air golf.
I would love that. Love that. Tarkin's probably good at air golf as well.
Oh, yeah. Tarkin is a murderer at air golf. He makes so many deals there. He finds out people's weaknesses. Krennic sucks at it. Krennic can barely get in the club.
Just hacking. I'm in the rough again. This is not what I wanted. And then you got Thrawn over there. Like, how did you nail that putt perfectly? Well, I measured my club before the match and I tested the wind and then I banked it off just perfectly. I'm infallible. I think it would work. I think it would work.
Yeah, that's it right there. Airspace golf with all of our favorites from the Empire. Vader's got no patience for that. Great question, Aaron. I'm really hoping to see more of this. I think it's a really obvious, great real world thing to expand in Star Wars. Even, and again, for people who are fans of things that are in smaller points in canon, I would love to see this explode out in a big way on the screen. Move on to Fandom Engage. Fandom Engage says, war! Now that storytelling is moving in a new direction, do you find the new books set in the old era as important, necessary to the story of Star Wars moving forward, or more of a chore? My Audible is filling up with books I need to get to, and I'm needing counseling, I suppose. Thanks. That's a lot of great things here in Fandom Engage, the Twitter handle, obviously. But if that was a person's name, I'd be into that too. First name Fandom, last name Engage. Yeah, I think just a question of kind of which books are we gravitating toward, and is there any specific relationship with, do we feel like books that are set in older eras, like that it's time to move on because they're not adding as much canon?
It's tough for me to counsel on. This is just one of those personal preferences then, I guess. I mentioned in the first half of the show, like I'm getting more excited for High Republic, and that's in the galaxy I know and love, but I was not struggling, but just like, okay, yeah, right. 200 years ago. Okay, fine. Let's finally go dive in that era. I would love Krennic the college years. I would love more of that. And that's me. And I know a lot of people don't share that opinion, and we're going to dive deep into the discussion on Thrawn on Thursday. No secret. I by the way, enjoying the book. I think it's good. I am struggling just knowing that this is taking place off to the left of the screen, very far to the left of the screen, and could affect the characters that I love and could affect the galaxy I know, but I'm not feeling it, so I feel disconnected from it. So I'm struggling through that a little bit. Not the quality of the book, it's me. So maybe Fandom Engage has the opposite, where they totally want to dive into the chaos and the unknown regions and all those kind of things and not get the answers, not need answers that connect to what does Will of Tarkin feel about this right now. I get it. So I don't know, Joseph. I that's some horrible counseling, but I don't find those, the eras we know and love, I don't find them chores yet.
Yeah, I think that's actually great counseling, because I think the best counseling is, it is about personal preference. I think when a novel comes out that does really put a specific new twist on something, that information gets shared pretty quickly among Star Wars fans, right? Of something that's viewed as a little bit more essential. Like, I think Leia, Princess of Alderaan, it's not like there's juicy new canon make you totally realize that you didn't understand Star Wars before, but it is a real clear picture of the path toward rebellion and the deep desire to not have to make this any sort of a violent fight, but desperately trying to keep it a political fight, and what the characters go through. So I think when a book set in an older era or an era we know well has some kind of juicy canon, it rises to the top and people talk about it. Bloodline is probably the best example, actually, because it does have some like real central canon of how and when did the galaxy ever know that Leia is related to Vader, you know, great implications of, you know, the start of the First Order and the start of the Resistance and all that. That's canon, right? The Rise of Kylo Ren comic, that's canon. That's information about Kylo moving from the Jedi Temple into the arms of the First Order and all that kind of stuff. But beyond that, I think almost all of the books and the comics are when they're good, it's because they flesh out the character and they go to a kind of depth that a movie isn't designed to. It's a different kind of storytelling to go inside the character's head. And I think then it does just come down to personal preference of, it's not about era. It's about which characters do you want to spend a lot of time in their head, yeah. You know? And if you're a fan of, if you go and see Solo and you're like, I like Kira, then, you know, you want to read Most Wanted because you get to learn more about that. If you're really a big fan of Starfighters, you know, you want to read Alphabet Squadron because it gets in the heads of those characters. I think it really does come down to not worrying as much about canon, because if it's big, important canon, the general fandom will let you know. And other than that, it's less about era, I think, and more about characters and style that you want to spend more time with.
And I would say to Fandom Engage or anyone listening, don't feel bad if you're not going to get to them all. You know, I think we in since 2015, but really 2012 into 2014, when we started getting new books and everything, there can be this desire, because we love this stuff, to just fill your brain with every piece of information. I think it's okay. I'm a little less connected to the comics right now. Definitely not connected to the IDW stuff. And there's some great stuff in there. And that's okay. And I think it's okay, too, just to be like, you know what? My Audible book list is filled up, and I don't know if I want to listen to Alphabet Squadron. I don't know if I want to hear about Count Dooku when he was young, and that's okay. And that's okay. You're still going to get a lot out of Star Wars. There's still a lot to chew on.
Yeah. I think that's a great distinction too. Like, if you love Thrawn and you want to spend quality time with Thrawn, then I think, yeah, prioritize the Thrawn books. If you're also somebody who's like, I like knowing canon, you can read Dooku's Wikipedia page. And you will get that, you know, and you, so both are still available. You just don't have to commit all the time to reading if you're more interested in just like, I want to know the facts. I want to know the story.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of facts out there. A lot of books, a lot of comics, a lot of stuff.
Yes. So many facts. So very many facts. For now, we're going to move on to our questions from Patreon. This one comes from Paul Wright. Paul says, whilst obviously not a Force user, do you believe the Force was actively looking after Han, knowing the role he will play to defeat the Sith? Fate, or the Force, helps him escape Corellia, meet Chewie, did the never-been-done-before infamous Kessel Run to escape the Empire, shot first, oh yes he did, come back for Luke to blow up the first Death Star, both found Luke on Hoth, survived an asteroid field, and survived carbon freezing, all against the odds, as 3PO kept reminding us of, only to be there at the pivotal moment for his son, to finally defeat Papa Palps. There's a lot of great ideas here and a great rundown of the best of Han Solo's successes in the Skywalker saga. What do you think about that, Ken? How do you feel about the idea that force or fate or luck or some larger cosmic idea is at work in the successes of Han Solo?
Yeah, this is the question that kind of got me in the best way of just like, yeah, let me really try to figure out what I think about this. And what I think about the Star Wars story. So great job, Paul. Great job, everyone this week. But Paul, this one really kind of jumped out. I got to tell you, and this could go into maybe, I don't know, real world beliefs, or real world discussions about what is actually what. And we'll never figure that out. Let me just put it in these terms. Like, you and I always talk about destiny is about bringing you to the point of choice in a general sense. You know, we can have bigger discussions about destiny in Star Wars. Han is faced with a lot of choices. Somebody makes very well. Somebody makes not good at all, but he always comes down and always is in the end. I do believe in my heart that there's could be something about the Force if it has itself in the game to that level. You know, it's not just worried about the folks swinging the lightsabers. It's worried about everyone. It is a energy field that binds us all together. Does it know 100% what is coming? No, but it I don't think so. Again, choice and it's a series of increasingly tough choices that these characters have to make. I could see that there's just something. We need this one. We need this kid. I'm not saying the Force is actively rooting for Han or actively making him get out of the Kessel Run or shoot first or shoot more accurately. I still think Han is doing a lot of that on his own. His fly by the seat of the pants. A type of guy. I don't necessarily think he's a spiritual character in Star Wars, like a Jedi, like a Luke or Leia. But yeah, Joseph, I can get behind this idea that the Force had its eye on Luke, on Han. The Force had its eye on him.
And yeah, all right. You're doing a little... I like the paraphrasing of Hamilton there.
Did I? Oh, yes.
The Force had its eye on Han. That's great. Sorry. Okay. I talked over you a little bit there. What were you saying?
No. I said that's kind of where I kind of go with it. I don't know if that's my final answer, Paul, but I think that's where I go with it, where I think, yeah, I think a lot of these characters, a lot of it in the Star Wars story can just, yep, have a part to play.
Yeah, I think that my vision of the Force and the way the Jedi talk about the will of the Force is not quite like this moving chess pieces into play. Mm-hmm. I think there's been some, you know, writing of being in the Force is like from a certain point of view. I really like some of the writing of Obi-Wan experiencing entering the Force and sort of being fractured in time and seeing the past and seeing all of the different versions of the future that can be. I like the idea of the Force is like so much larger and not even really linear. It just sees all the things that could be, and almost in like Doctor Who, this idea that time is always moving and always changing, but there are fixed points, and that maybe the will of the Force is like, yeah, there are some things that no matter what anybody does, we're going to end up here. And then maybe that's big world events, right? Big galactic events. But I think for someone like Han, and really for all characters, I like this idea a lot that we've been talking about, as you said, that destiny is, there's something true about you. There's something true about the path set in front of you that you can't avoid dealing with these things that you are going to inevitably have to deal with because of who you are, because of, you know, the situation that you found yourself in the galaxy. You can't avoid a war. Luke's super powerful with the Force, so even if he tries to stay on Tatooine, people are eventually going to come for him. All these kind of ideas. And I like taking that a step farther with Han, of that spiritually you could look at the Force as saying, well, we see past any sort of bravado or fake face you put up, and we see the truth of who you are. And Han Solo, the Force sees the truth that, much like Kira, you're a good guy. You care about people. You don't want to see them hurt, and you want to take a chance to do the right thing. So we're going to keep putting these opportunities in front of you where you have no choice but to confront yourself and confront the idea that what you want to do is always say yes to helping Enfys Nest. You always want to turn around and be there for that kid, Luke. You know, you always want to be there for Leia. We know you're scared of talking to your son, but we know you, that's who you are. So we're going to keep putting these paths in front of you where you can choose to be who you are. That's the way I kind of like to look at the Force, offering these opportunities to Han to confront his destiny, his true destiny of just who he is.
Yeah, I love this. You know, always in motion, the future is right. Like I don't believe there's one path in front of all those characters. So I love what you're saying here. Just like, you know, again, time and time again, you have a part to play. Again, we all have a part to play in this story. Gandalf is showing up here and hanging with Yoda and telling us all that, you know, all you have to do is decide what to do with the time that's given to you, and it all kind of, you know, kind of can matter in the larger scale of the story, thinking of like Gollum and that kind of stuff. So Han is not Gollum, but Paul, I don't know if I answered, maybe Joseph answered you a little bit better. I just think there's, it's not just luck. I'm looking at like finding Luke on Hoth and everything. Like it's not necessarily that the Force guided him there, but the fact that he was willing to look, he's rewarded for that.
Yeah, I really like that. I think the other thing for me is I really like conversations about destiny, but the reason that I think I keep thinking of it so much, destiny means that a choice is going to come to you because of who you are, and you can't avoid that. But destiny is not relieving you of choice, because Star Wars is so much about choosing who you want to be and being proactive about your choice. So the idea that Han is kind of this hapless guy and the Force just keeps being like, oh, yeah, let's tweak that stormtrooper's aim off a little bit so it doesn't hit Han. You know, I think to me that undermines a little bit of the agency of he has to choose who he is. In a lot of these scrapes that he survives, we love looking at him because they're like, Han, why did you do that? But when you look at, you know, why it might have worked, it's because he has skill, because he's a good shot, because he's intuitive, because that's a great psychological game to play with those stormtroopers of screaming and run at him. A lot of times he gets by with something that he shouldn't because he's actually just charming. And there's a lot of Han that is, you know, it's his agency that is getting him through some of these scrapes. All that said, I do think Obi-Wan guided him to Luke on on Hoth.
Yeah. I hear a whisper in the wind. Yeah, look, we could talk more and more about Destiny and everything. I think it's something that over the maybe the last year, I think it might be coming out of the Rey stuff too, of just like, and I got to tell you, I always bring it up time and time again, but like Game of Thrones stuff, where I look at Jon Snow, the boy who would be king, but that wasn't his story. That wasn't it. And so when he didn't become that, maybe some disappointment, I get it, but that's not, so there's this concept of destiny in fantasy stories. Ah, this character is going to be this because destiny has called him to be it. That's fine for me. I'm just now looking at it as more as, it just means more when they make these choices. And when he makes a choice to become a free folk, that's more powerful to me than destiny taking you on a path that cannot be changed. And yeah. I think Star Wars, like you said, just is full of that kind of stuff. Choices.
Yeah, and to bring it back to Jon Snow, as one of the great quotes to me of fantasy of, I don't want it.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a choice. Great question, Paul Wright.
Mm.
We're going to move on to our final question from Brennan Marr. Brennan says, a while back, a friend and I were discussing the great throne room scene in The Last Jedi. My friend seemed unconvinced that someone as emotionally volatile as Kylo Ren / Ben Solo could fool Supreme Leader Snoke and assassinate him. That got me thinking, did Kylo succeed because Snoke's arrogance blinded him? Or did Kylo, through the dyad, draw emotional strength from Rey and thus successfully hide his emotions and true intentions? Or is it a combination of both, or is it something else? Thanks. Thanks for the great question, Brennan. Ken, where are you at with how Kylo, because I think he's Kylo in that moment, not Ben. How do you think Kylo succeeded in assassinating Supreme Leader Snoke?
Yeah, and this is fun to discuss with the whole picture and not worrying about the realities of Rian Johnson writing his script at a time where maybe a dyad wasn't part of the equation. No, there's definitely Rian Johnson puts this giant, huge, important connection between Rey and Kylo / Ben. So it's there. But for me, this moment becomes more powerful when it is about Kylo being so aware that his boss, former mentor, whatever you want to call him, is just blinded by a lot of things, not just arrogance, but just like, it's almost as if Snoke's like, you're a child of evil destiny, and this is the way it's going to go, or I'll kill you. That he just couldn't see. To me, it's just more powerful that Kylo knows to exploit that for his own gain in this moment.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of my favorite parts of Last Jedi. I think it's really elegant. I think there's a couple things going on. We know that Snoke kind of mocks him. Like, there's some honesty in it of, you know, when he killed his father, it you know, split him to the bone and he was unbalanced and all that. But Snoke is going out of his way to, as Snoke says, you know, paraphrasing, stoke his conflicted soul to draw Rey in to try to save him. And I think part of Kylo's response to killing his father and feeling unbalanced by that, and, you know, he thought he'd been told for so long, like, that's this amazing thing you have to accomplish of truly kill your past and you will become what you were meant to be. He kills his dad, not quite that. Then his mentor, who kind of handed him that line, says, you're still not who I wanted you to be. You're still such a failure. That Kylo, through all of his various interactions with Rey, I think really gets himself to that point of, you know what? Everyone's got to go. I don't want any parent figures. I don't want anyone telling me what to do. They all got to go. Kill the past. It's the only way to become what you're meant to be. He's trying to convince Rey of that, but I think he's become really convinced of it himself. So I think he is looking for that way to get rid of Snoke to kill his new dad, since killing his actual dad didn't work for him. And then what I think is so elegant about it is Snoke's overconfidence. It's not that Kylo plans this great elaborate plot to assassinate Snoke. He'd probably be caught in that. I think it's that Kylo is focused. He knows what he wants. He's not being kind of volatile and all over the map. He wants Snoke to die, and he looks for the opportunity, and Snoke presents him the perfect opportunity where Snoke, as he says in the movie, can sense Kylo's actual intention of, you're my enemy, I am bringing this blade to you, and I'm going to rip you apart. And in Snoke's arrogance, he just doesn't realize that that is absolutely Kylo's truth from a certain point of view. And that point of view is not directed at Rey. It's directed at him. And I just think it's such a great way to play around with that idea of point of view and that idea where we feel triumphant for a moment because it feels like Kylo is focused. He's just focused on something different than we think in that moment.
Yeah. And it, yeah. And if there's any kind of connection or the connection that is there between him and Rey, like I wonder, lack of a better term, if Kylo's just kind of feeding back the wrong information to her as well, you know, like if she's like, oh yeah, hope springs eternal inside of you. And he's like, yeah, hope for killing my boss. So I don't know. Yeah. I like that. I like that. Good stuff, Brennan.
Yeah. Yeah. So great question. And it sounds like so much fun to discuss that with a friend. That's such a great, ooh, what do you think is really going on there in Star Wars kind of conversation. So those are our questions this week from Brennan, from Paul, from Fandom Engage, and from Aaron. Thank you all so much. Great questions as always. That's it, Ken.
Great stuff indeed. If you want to reach out with some questions or join the conversation about this episode, you can go follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center. We are on Instagram, YouTube as well. Subscribe over there. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Yeah, we're trying to get on Amazon Music too. Every podcast in the world is, and we're working on that. So stay tuned for that. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and at patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us. A lot of new supporters this week. We appreciate it. Thank you so much for just fueling our efforts here at Force Center. It means a lot. But as always, one of the best ways to support, just give us a listen, a like, a subscription, a rating, a review, and tell a friend about Force Center. Got some stuff here on my website that I want you all to check out here, kenapsuck.com. Got a big live show coming up on October 10th. This is Mark Riley's Riley's Cantina live show that I'll be featured on. Put it together with Mark, and we got a lot of guests. Some we're not quite ready to announce, but one I can, a special appearance by the one and only Joseph Scrimshaw. Thank you, sir, for being part of the show coming up on October 10th.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Thank you, and Mark, for asking me. So I'm excited to make a digital appearance.
Digital appearance. Yeah, it's a little tricky. It's a live show streamed to the world. You can buy tickets anywhere. Watch it 7 p.m. Pacific. The link will remain live for a couple days after. There, you can go to kenapsuck.com/ go to the events page, I should say. You can link to where you buy tickets, a special live Q&A. Mark and I will be on stage, maybe one or two people responsibly, socially distant and responsibly on stage. Rest will be digital appearances, but it's a great Star Wars comedy kind of a variety hour, for lack of a better term. A lot of fun. Some more information on that. Joseph and I have been highlighting charities of choice here. This week, I want to highlight St. Baldrick's Foundation at stbaldricks.org. This is something that a friend of mine, a scribbler, Jeff Saunders, does a lot of work with. He works in the childhood cancer area, and this is what St. Baldrick's Foundation is about. It's an organization that raises funds to specifically support childhood cancer research. And my pal Jeff from the Feeding the Monster podcast just did another one of his like shave events. He shaved off his mustache for the charity to raise awareness. And I know Jeff and his team over there out in South Texas area, they've been having some hard times. It can be a rewarding line of work, but also a real just painful and sad line of work at times. And that's the reality of it. And I know they all need a little uplifting. So Jeff and the team and everyone at St. Baldrick's, we appreciate what you do. You can check it out if you want to get involved at stbaldricks.org. Joseph, over to you for all of your plugs and your great charities.
Yeah, great thoughts, great ideas to support. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for links to my other podcast, Obsessed, comedy albums, that show on Adult Swim, Tig Tone. And I'm still supporting Vote Forward, This is a basically an idea where you can write a message to voters, other voters, to encourage them to use their power to vote how they see fit by writing a quick letter. There is a mailing deadline for Vote Forward for those letters on October 17th. So if you're interested in writing a few letters, you can go sign up now. Their website is votefwd.org.
Do it. And by the way, check if you're registered to vote. I was damn sure I was. Just did a check. Saw one of those links going around social media. And like late in the day, I was like, ah, sure. And I wasn't. I had to re-up. So make sure you do that so you can vote. Vote indeed. Important stuff.
Yeah.
All right. We are out of here this week. Force Center News and Cues. So for Moff Gideon and all the spilt tea in the galaxy, we'll see you next time on Force Center.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.